At the heart of Seeking Shelter is Evelyn, a mother who, with her young children, spent 5 years without a stable home in Los Angeles. She possesses many remarkable qualities, such as resilience, adaptability, definitely stubbornness, and her story holds many remarkable moments that include her courageous escape from a violent household and maintaining a 98% school attendance rate for her children while working as a restaurant server and searching for a home. Her story is truly like a survival saga about a group of people stranded and depending only on each other. In this case, stranded in the unforgiving urban wilderness of a modern American city. Yet, as I've listened to Evelyn's stories over the years of writing this book, what is maybe most remarkable is that after all this, she sounds like almost any parent you know. She will steer any conversation topic back to her kids, their sports games and school projects, and how good they are to each other. The grace of her story resides in this quiet love and the normalcy of her kids being the absolute center of her world, even when her world was spiraling chaos and danger. Evelyn's purpose in trusting me to share their story is to help nurture an America in which survival doesn't cost so inconceivably much for parents like her. Here are 5 insights. Insight number 1. The ideas widely taught about how to be happy and successful in America do not apply to Americans who can't afford shelter. A part of growing up for most people in this country included lessons from parents and teachers about finding your passions, following your dreams, being curious, working hard, taking time to slow down once in a while and just breathe. These are some of the gems of a society that values individual agency and celebrates upward mobility. A multi-billion-dollar industry of inspirational books and other products tailor these very lessons to different demographics of people. Now consider Evelyn, a working mother who lost her home due to domestic violence, and a typical day in which her first priority was getting her young kids to school on time by 8 a.m. so they wouldn't get tardy slips, and then getting herself to work on time so she wouldn't get in trouble. Some days they might have been waking up in a cheap motel, an hour plus away that they would have to pack up. Others they might have spent sleeping in her Toyota SUV. Imagine the process simply of washing and dressing and making themselves presentable for school. Then imagine Evelyn's workdays as a restaurant server on her feet without pause for 8 hours at a time. There was definitely no option for her of spending an hour and a half on hold with city housing in hope of receiving shelter space that week. Instead, after work and school pickups came the real pressure and fear as each passing minute toward night and the dangers it posed to a woman and her children stacked up, those urgent and dire minutes looking for a place where they might rest safely for a few hours before doing it all again. For families lacking the most basic element of stability, which is a home, the traditional lessons on how to get ahead are not even relevant. A disconnect that has to do with money, of course, and not having enough of it. But even more so, it has to do with time and the starkly different value that a unit of time, just 1 minute, can hold. In Evelyn's case, every minute was so desperate that there was never time to think realistically about what her passions were. No time to make plans for anything not directly related to food and shelter. Certainly no time to breathe or meditate or form long-term goals. The only goal was survival that night. The one luxury Evelyn took the time and money for, in order to maintain some small glimmer of beauty in their lives, was flowers. She bought a small bouquet wholesale each week to decorate wherever they ended up sleeping, even if those flowers were perched on the dashboard of her car. Insight number 2. The majority of families who are homeless don't want you to know that they are homeless. Evelyn survived for years knowing that if she wasn't able to be on the phone with social services at exactly 5:01 p.m. each evening, then there was a likelihood that she and her children would have to sleep in her SUV. She lived knowing that an illness or a parking ticket could mean not being able to feed those children. She went over elementary school homework assignments in between working restaurant shifts while fearing retaliation from her ex-husband. She did all of this in secret and almost entirely alone, because she understood that seeking traditional support sources or making her plight known, even to people with whom she interacted daily, like her kids' teachers, could put her on the radar of city agencies, threaten her children's future, possibly result in being relocated or separated or worse. Even in the best case, her children would likely lose their placement in the public school that was the only stable and welcoming entity in their lives. For Evelyn, an absolute imperative for keeping her family intact and her kids in school hinged on how successful she was at hiding her situation. She drilled into her children the understanding that no teacher or counselor at school or anywhere else, no matter how kind and nurturing, could know that they were homeless. In other words, she taught her children to lie as a matter of surviving together. The wide public perception of homelessness in America has to do with the panhandlers in transit stations and long lines outside of emergency shelters and soup kitchens. But there is this huge population of people without shelter who are not in those places because they are striving to be unnoticed, unseen. These are parents who work and children who go to school, hundreds of thousands of people all around us who might have been recently evicted from their apartment or fired from a job, but are doing their best to function without much help in a society that makes it dangerous for them to ask for it. Insight number 3, homeless children carry unseen social burdens that lead to lasting cycles of struggle. The psychology of growing up is tightly entwined with the psychology of belonging. And when young people like Evelyn's children are not permitted to confide the vital details of their lives, even to close friends, then they are deprived of the essential experiences of honest relationships. Imagine growing up in a situation in which the risks of friends and teachers learning where you go after school are in the realm of being pulled from that school, taken away from your parents and siblings, placed in the foster system. This burden is heavy, and for thousands of children, it is embedded in every moment of daily social and academic life. And that is on top of the more obvious circumstance of not being able to afford supplies or clothes that fit right or shoes with intact soles, not being able to go out to lunch or to the mall with people you like. Evelyn's oldest son, Orlando, was starting 7th grade when his family was cast into homelessness. He was good at math and was the one who gamed out their food budget each month. He was often responsible for 4 younger siblings so that their mom could work. He took pride in all that. He also made friends skateboarding until his mother realized that any injury requiring medical care could ruin their finances and he had to stop. From a distance, he would watch kids he liked skate and buy food he couldn't afford. He couldn't text with them without a phone data plan. He didn't know how to play the video games they played. A sleepover at a friend's house meant good food and a comfortable place to rest his head, but also made him feel like he was abandoning his mother and younger siblings. It's a lot of pressure, a lot of friction, a lot of taut strings yanking a young man different ways. And he was not permitted to express any of these feelings. They could get his family in trouble. This was a lonely way to experience childhood. Insight number 4. When local communities take action to combat homelessness, it's almost always too late. Housing affordability appeared near the top of many 2024 election year polls regarding issues that Americans cared about. But for most Americans, even those who reside in cities with staggering disparity, homelessness remains an abstract concern. It is an important topic at family dinner tables and school classrooms and places of worship. But homeless populations still tend to be concentrated in distinct out-of-the-way areas of cities. They are geographically othered. This isolation from mainstream society is very much intentional on the part of civic agencies, as it is actually really easy to herd transient people around through policing and sanitation practices and the placement of services. Housed people feel a lot better about their neighborhoods and their elected officials when their concern for the homeless crisis can be expressed at moments and in spaces of their own choosing without the discomfort of direct interaction and seeing scarcity in the flesh. And to be fair, most people work hard for their homes and take pride in their communities and schools, and people want to feel safe. I'm not saying that shouldn't matter, but here is the insight. When homelessness in a community is no longer abstract, when housing becomes so severely unaffordable that there are so many human beings surviving outside on the street and it affects daily quality of life and housed people are constantly confronted up close by this sadness and tragedy, that is when voters tend to really care concretely in the form of funding measures and demanding changes that actually drive new public policy. And by the time this happens, what it means is that the existing infrastructure of services has already been maxed out. It's been overrun by need. This is Evelyn's Los Angeles. This is a lot of cities right now. And since only at this crisis point do the politics of it all actually get moving, the results of that movement nearly always resemble triage at best. This cycle is centuries old. Homelessness is a humanitarian issue that no city in America has ever gotten ahead of. Insight number 5. The most powerless people in our midst are stronger, smarter, more capable, more caring, and more deserving than you can possibly imagine. This is the real point of the whole story of Evelyn's family. She is a person who, through bad timing and bad luck, bad people in a few decisions she wishes she could take back, was left without hope amid a broken American dream. She was a single working mother of 5, homeless in one of the country's most merciless housing markets. Yet she found a way to earn money for subsistence and care enough for her children to see them to school every morning and pick them up each evening, feeding and nurturing them in between, volunteering at their school, going to sports games and dance recitals, taking them to the beach and to museums on weekends. She found shelter where she could, and she evaded the people and agencies that threatened her family. Her oldest son is now a college freshman, and her younger children are all on different paths to college. One's great at science. One loves baseball. Her daughter considers herself more of an artist. They can do and be these things because Evelyn believed in herself and her children in the midst of a society that didn't believe in them at all, that was at some points pitying, at other points repulsed, and overall widely apathetic to their hardships. The sheer force of the love and determination and self-advocacy in this story and the act of sharing this story still overwhelms me. The one thing that can truly help families like Evelyn's, and what might be the sum of these various insights, is a community ethos that shares even a measure of that belief. Evelyn eventually found transitional housing in a small, faith-based shelter in a quiet residential area of Greater Los Angeles. This group provided her with counseling and childcare without condition or judgment. She could find decent work nearby, and her kids could all go to a good public school and form meaningful relationships within a few square blocks. They could play safely outside, ride bikes. Evelyn could take walks and pick her flowers and have windowsills to put them on. Going back to the first insight about the utter lack of the time and calmness human beings need to make thoughtful plans for themselves, Evelyn found these commodities here, in a shelter that wasn't going to turn her out the next morning or demand hours of driving, waiting in line, waiting on hold for help. That particular kind of altruism is exceedingly rare in cities today. There's no lack of organizations equipped to provide it, or even money to pay for it. But it's hard to move this idea through local zoning restrictions and that kind of thing, because it's hard to find welcoming local communities. Homeowners who will actually assume the mantle of helping the unhoused, not in some outlying place, but where they live. I'm not exaggerating when I say that if every neighborhood in every city afflicted by severe housing disparity made the effort to host a single shelter, housing 6 to 10 vetted families for a few months at a time, then there would no longer be homelessness in this country for working families, and hundreds of thousands of children would be able to free themselves from this American cycle of destitution and isolation, like Evelyn's are doing right now. Thank you so much for listening to some of Evelyn's story and hearing these insights. I'm really grateful for your time. Evelyn and her kids are, too.